chapter. Six days after Peter had acknowledged Jesus as the Christ, the Son of the living God, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them, and his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly, there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will make three dwellings here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them. And from the cloud a voice said, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." The Gospel of the Lord. This is the second time that God has spoken from a cloud, and it appears that God repeats the divine self when God talks. The first time we heard this voice from the clouds was when Jesus came up out of the waters after being baptized. God said, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased." It happens again in this text, that we have this cloud overshadowing them, and God says, "This is my Son, the Beloved. With him I am well pleased." But then God adds three more words: "Listen to him." Literally to mean understand what he is telling you. So as we engage this text, it's about us understanding, God giving us the understanding as well, to understand who Jesus is, to understand what Jesus does, and finally to understand what matters. So we start with understanding who Jesus is. In the Gospel of Matthew, there is a special emphasis on Jesus as the Son of God. So the short answer to who is Jesus? Jesus is the Son of God. And we find that this claiming to be the Son of God is what shapes his ministry and leads to his death. In the 21st chapter of Matthew, we find out that his enemies want to kill him because he is the Son of God. In chapter 26 of Matthew, Jesus is sentenced to death for claiming to be the Son of God. In Matthew 27, Jesus is mocked by his opponents who claim that he is not able to get himself down from the cross, and so his fate proves he's not the Son of God. But the true confession that Jesus is the Son of God comes from those who are present at his crucifixion and witness his death. Truly, he is the Son of God. What we see, what we encounter revealed at that moment is an understanding that comes from God, that Jesus is the Son of God. Claiming that Jesus is the Son of God then leads us to reflect upon understanding what Jesus does as the Son of God. I hope that what you'll do whenever you encounter a scriptural passage is not only to focus on the passage that you're reading, but also to take a look at what is happening prior to that passage and what happens after that passage. And if you do that with the gospel text for today, you will find that something similar happens before and after. Just before the text, Jesus announces what it means to be God's chosen one, that what it means to be God's chosen one is to suffer and to die and to be raised from the dead. If you go to after the text, you will find Jesus says the same thing, that to be the Son of God is to suffer and to die and to be raised from the dead. To place this text in the middle of the two and to have God claim Jesus as his son is for God to bring clarity to the fact that Jesus' purpose is to suffer and to die and to be raised from the dead. Yet what we encounter in learning Jesus' purpose is what the normal human response is. It happens twice. Peter tries saying something, and he's interrupted by God. The first time is when Jesus announces that he's going to suffer and die and be raised from the dead. Peter pulls Jesus aside and rebukes him, and Jesus turns around and rebukes Peter back and shuts him down. The second time is as Peter is talking on top of that mountain. It's good that we're here. We should build these booths. And we read that while he's still speaking, this outspoken God talks over him and claims Jesus as God's son. I think what that gives us is this notion that we as humans, even though we understand what God is doing through Jesus, will resist God's actions. Sure, we'll accept God's mercy and forgiveness for those minor transgressions that we know that we commit, and we want that guilt removed from our shoulders. And sure, we will find comfort in hearing the claim that when people are at their darkest moments, when they are suffering and struggling, that God is present, Jesus is present in those moments with the person. But we must go one step further and acknowledge that Jesus also offers mercy to those who kill him. The criminal, the one who is perpetrating the violence, also has a claim made on him or her by a merciful God. And I think that's when we start to resist the most. Dare we offer forgiveness to someone that we despise who has done something abominable? One song goes, do you really want to believe in someone who takes a bullet for the person who pulls the trigger? That's what Jesus does. So we understand who Jesus is. We understand what Jesus does, and that leads us to then understand what matters. In the Gospel of Matthew, we see that God is present in the world through Jesus. And Jesus then becomes present in the world through the church. And the church is present in the world. We are the ones who live out Christ's mission in this world. And so as we live out Christ's mission in this world, we need to discern what matters. What is characteristic of being part of this different kind of community. If you read the book, Thank You for Being Late by Thomas Friedman, he gives us three things to consider for what really matters to us. He says that pluralism matters. He points out that in the next 25 years, America will become a majority of non-white people in its population. He says the challenge we face is how can we do that without ever having really worked out our racial issues? So to see the white population surpassed and yet not having worked out the racial issues that come with that dynamic. And Friedman goes on to point out that countries that have the capacity to integrate, hear that, countries who have the capacity to integrate, who can make out of many one people, will be the countries that have more political stability and more innovative powers. One of our members recently was meticulous in his study of press releases for about the last 10 years. And he was particularly exploring what is different between countries that have integrated refugees into who that country is and those who have rejected the refugees. He did that by looking at press reports from all around the world for that time period. And the conclusion he came to, based on what he collected, was that the nations that integrated the refugees saw less violence and attacks than those who did not. That integration is what keeps us safe from violence, not rejection. That's why we as a congregation have for years been the site that hosts Lutheran and Refugee and Immigration Services. And when they closed their office, we immediately opened up our space to Bethany Christian Services, because we believe that the vision that God has for community is of an extraordinarily diverse community where all people are integrated into that community, who are people with integrity, whose lives should not be violated because of who they are or where they came from. Pluralism matters and makes a difference. Friedman says that leadership matters as well. It's a leadership, he says, that promotes inclusion and adaptation. It's a leadership that starts every day by asking, what world am I living in right now? And we will encounter people out there who are not living in the same world we are living in based on what they're telling us. It's a leadership that's willing to engage in the best practices of leadership. It's a leadership that has energy and wisdom to engage the challenges and the opportunities that are put before us. It's a leadership that trusts the truth about this moment in our country's history, in the life of our communities. The leadership that knows that just working hard and playing by the rules is no longer enough. It requires a sacrificial investment in our communities. If you have trouble with what you see happening nationally, then I encourage you to become involved locally. If you have trouble with what's going on at our national level, then become a leader at the grassroots level. Run for an office that is open in any form of government in this area. Step up to a board that makes a for an organization that makes a difference in the community and become engaged in their mission. find something that supports and makes the community better. Volunteer firefighters are becoming fewer and fewer, and our volunteer fire departments are at risk because people aren't volunteering to participate anymore. If you want to make a difference and are frustrated what's happening at the national level, get involved locally. Pluralism matters. Leadership matters, and our life philosophy matters. Friedman makes this point. The best solutions for helping people become more resilient cannot be downloaded from an app. Making it work cannot be downloaded from the internet. As I was sitting in a leadership class at Duke University, and we were talking about a large paper that we have to prepare, they were talking about time and management in the process of writing, and one of my classmates, who is into everything gadget-wise, raised his hand and said, I have that all figured out. It's like, how did you have this all figured out? I downloaded a time management app, and that's what's going to help me through this project. Can you really get time management from an app? The best solutions for helping people are being engaged face-to-face with those people. To be in relationship in the presence of others. But it's not just being around like-minded people. That doesn't count. To be around people that think like you do and talk like you do and act like you do. After all, it gets boring after a while, doesn't it? Unless you're really in love with yourself and you want to be surrounded by five other people who are just like you. Be engaged with those who differ from you. Ask them questions. Take the risk to find out what they believe and then explore that with them. Trust me, being present with someone who disagrees with you will not contaminate you and make you radioactive and make it a problem for you. It's entirely possible that when we engage with one another, that at the end of the conversation, the result will be that we encounter something that is so much bigger than either one of us. That's why we as a church, because how we approach relationships matters. That's why we believe in the power of civil public discourse. Allowing people, even in the community of faith, to disagree and engage with one another for the well-being of the community. Jesus is the Son of God. And as the Son of God, he forgives us where we are broken. He's present with us where we suffer, but also is showing mercy to those who are our enemies, which calls us then finally to engage with those as we see as our enemies. And in doing that, we are the church. As the church, we are the presence of Christ in this community. Amen.